This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Thanks for listening to CarCast on Podcast One.
I'm Dave Detman, also known as Dr. Gadget. I've got a new podcast called The Big Idea. And every week I talk to inventors and visionaries who made it big in their respective industries. We'll tackle weekly trending tech, provide inside tips for your success, and go deep dives on the latest and greatest innovations. And I know you're going to love this part. I'll also have plenty of free giveaways. Who doesn't love free stuff? So listen to and follow The Big Idea with me, Dr. Gadget, on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podcast One, and wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, welcome to CarCast. We've got a great show. Our friend Richard Waitis from Magnaflow Performance Exhaust is in the house with us. So we're looking forward to that. Before we get started, here's Geico. Would you love to save money on insurance? Well, of course. Who doesn't love a good deal? Well, when it comes to great rates on insurance for everything, Geico can help. Insurance for your car, truck, motorcycle, boat, RV, even homeowners, condo, and renters coverage. Save even more with a special discount when you bundle coverages. Plus, add the easy-to-use Geico mobile app and 24-hour roadside assistance, and the switch to Geico becomes a no-brainer. Switch today and see how you can save. Simply go to geico.com to get a rate quote or contact your local agent. Hello, welcome to CarCast. I'm Matt, the Motorator DeAndre, here with Bill Goldberg. What's up, buddy?
Well, I got my twin next to me, and the only way you can pull us apart is I rip the sleeves off my shirt. You like this Magnaflow shirt?
I do. I do like the Magnaflow shirt with those sleeves on it. Did it come with sleeves, or was it already sleeveless?
Oh, it came with sleeves.
It came with sleeves.
I had to do the Goldberg thing. It is like pushing 100 out here in Texas, right?
So, yeah.
I can't walk around with a long sleeve shirt. That's my excuse.
Right. Tomorrow you'll need a jacket.
No, we're in summer now, dude. There is no turning back, believe me.
Good. So we've got some stuff to go over. First, we want to welcome our good friend Richard Waitis, the man, the myth, the legend. You guys thought he was a ghost. We've been talking about him for years on the show. I know he's popped into a couple
cardboard. It's a cardboard
cutout of Richard Waitis. I don't know how this worked out, but it just kind of worked out last minute that Richard, you guys heard about us talk about him on the show many times, help us out endlessly on projects after projects, and appreciate that. And you guys have seen him a million times on every car building show out there. Certainly, if you're a fan of overhauling, he's been in a million episodes of that. And Rich, I guess you're just touring and visiting some of your shops that that you have relationships with. And you said, hey, while I'm in Texas, let me sneak over to Goldberg's ranch and see what's going on over there. And as you can see, quite a bit.
Yeah, it's been a long time since I've been able to come out and check out the collection. And obviously, a lot of this stuff that Goldberg's been working on, you know, getting that garage up to speed and watching that dream come true and actually finally getting to see it as we drove by today. Pretty awesome. It's always been something I know that Goldberg's talked about, is getting his collection to a place where he can get out and get in the cars and use the cars with more accessibility. And just watching it as we drove by it here, it is a reality now. We are so close to seeing that thing in its full form.
Yeah, we're not close enough. But, you know, you can never be close enough to agree that, yeah, the fact that they're finishing up the roof today, hopefully, and, moving on. Hopefully the biggest obstacles are behind us. And we actually went and saw the lawman early this morning and saw a buddy's collection, Mark Motors, here in, everybody knows I live in Bernie now. I might as well say Bernie, Texas, right? So Mark Motors is an import dealer that has an eclectic inventory of the top hypercars, supercars, whatever you want to call it these days.
Yeah.
In the middle of absolutely nowhere where we live. And it's amazing the collection they have. But what drew us there was the fact that he and his son have an old, you know, a classic car collection in the back that is quite impressive. And the best part about it is it's not manufacturer driven. It's a collection that's driven by memories, just like mine.
Yeah, so, right.
Say it's eclectic is an absolute understatement, but I was able to take Richard and Cam McCrew down there and introduce them to Bill Bird. Bill Bird is the proverbial 800-pound gorilla around here, and if you want anything and everything done, then you go to Bill Bird. Bill Bird obviously owns the storage facility where I've been storing everything also. So, but he's a great guy. No matter how successful he is, he has the passion for these muscle cars that we do too. So it's great just hearing the stories behind, you know, some of the pieces of the collection.
I mean, hearing stuff about first car driven and reacquiring that, the VW bus that, you know, his dad used to drive him around to is kind of the family wagon. You know, all of these cars, they aren't necessarily significant because of the brand, the particular model in the sense of value, but it's the story behind them. And we could have talked for hours hours about all of that. And that's the great part about these little collections is it's literally his life from childhood, first car driven, significant events in his life told through his collection. Yeah. So cool.
It's the meaning of the business, if you ask me. I mean, the smile on his face as he was uttering these specific stories about each and every car is freaking priceless. Yeah. You know, and that's what it's all about.
What was the first car, the one that he reacquired?
So he had this Granada, which was the first car he learned to drive on. And it was funny because, you know, he's in the business of selling cars, and we find this unrestored. It is not the exact car. It's just the same type of car that he had, color, everything else. Mm-hmm. And it's parked in the corner with a do not sell or not for sale sign on it. And I'm scratching my head. Me and Bill are walking through the collection, and we go, there's got to be a story behind this because it doesn't match anything there. No. And it's this 80s Granada, a two-door red interior, red outside. I mean, it literally is the car that I can remember that, you know, your parents handing you the keys over that this is what you're going to learn to drive in.
Right. Not a car you normally walk by and smile or chuckle, but if you have the memories, right, then you, yeah, then you do. Then you do walk by it and smile.
Well, that in the Wagoneer, that was a,
oh, yeah,
you know,
Grand Wagoneer. And he said he just bought the new one. Obviously, these memories are, you know, what really make us in this automotive community drive into all of these things, because here he is buying the literal replacement vehicle of what he remembered as a kid. And then now he's buying the new version. You know, they just came out with that new Grand Wagoneer, and he's got both now.
And then you got a Rolls Royce parked next to a 70 Z28. And then you got a VW bus. And then you got the Granada. And I mean, you know, it's, then you have a couple Defenders and some Jags and Austin Healey's
and he's got his kids got an R33 right-hand drive car that's sitting there in pristine order, under 50,000 original miles.
Nice.
I mean, the collection's now expanding into Billy, his son, yep, son of Bill. And, that was a lot of Bills today, by the way.
Yeah, Bill.
But, you know, that's, this whole collection was just this mishmash of all of these memories. And now it's just expanded into his son's own, you know, things that are meaningful to him. And like I said, we could have spent hours there.
And again, you know, it backs up the story that it doesn't matter your background. It doesn't matter your socioeconomic, you know, classification. If you talk about old cars, it brings everybody together on an even plane. And it's just kind of cool.
Yeah.
He has a dealer as well. Does he sell cars? Is that what he's doing there?
Well, he owns Mark Motors, which is kind of like an import deal. I've never seen that many G wagons in one place.
Right,
McLaren's
okay,
sitting inside, you know, not covered. I didn't step inside the showroom.
Oh, the showroom from the latest Lamborghini Huracans. You name the vehicle, he had even some of the more less available. That he had a G40. Oh, he had the new Hummer, the electric,
yeah,
Hummer. He has one of those in there. I mean, you name it. It's, if it's hot and it's a premium car right now, it's there.
It's unbelievable. In the middle of absolutely nowhere, and you get people flying in from everywhere across the country/world to buy these. And then in the back, you know, it's got the bread and butter of what started everything. You know, he also owns a Jaguar and a Land Rover dealership and 3/4 of this town. But, you know, at the end of the day, you talk about these cars and the memories that they evoke. He's just a normal guy, gearhead like anybody else.
It sounds like he's got a great collection over there in addition to the dealer. He's kind of the Bo Bachman of Texas, right? He's because, you know, the guys over here at Gas, at Galpin, they've got that huge museum. And talk about walking through and just telling stories. You walk through there, and there's some really amazing cars, and there's some really funky shit. And it's just because Bo loves it, right? And
we saw the same thing. You know, the collection is driven by memories when you see that eclectic, you know, this thing that parked next to the freaking Austin Healey that I don't know, you know, how expensive that thing is, you know, but then you had the, what was next to it, that Cutlass?
He had one of those Sport 350s. It's like a Judge, but a smaller package. It didn't have the same engine package, obviously, the 350 indicating the size of the motor, but. It's bright yellow with all the same kind of things that the Judge had, same wings, same front accents, but it's not a car you would normally find it's not a Judge. In the same year, that was the car people were driven to, yet this Cutlass had this package. It was just an unusual car to find in that collection.
It was really neat because everything's in pretty much pristine condition, and it was like walking through a Hot Wheels, you know, like Hot Wheels museum, because everything... Each car evoked what that manufacturer was going for at that time, right? Whether it's bright, ostentatious, whether it's glitzy, whatever it is, that was the best of what was represented in those years. And it's really cool to be able to, it's like a time capsule to walk in there and check it out.
So after touring that, you guys swung by, because he's holding on to your cars. You're building this garage. You've got cars mostly over there. Who knows where you got them stashed all over the place. But you're just trying to get by with holding on to the, you know, keeping the everything secured while you get the garage up. So we saw the video, the delivery video of the lawman and. But Richard, tell me about it. What do you guys think of that? What do you think of that car, seeing it up close in person, like fully restored? First of all, did you see the car? You saw the car before it was done, right? You were involved with
last
that car.
Time it was in 1,000 pieces getting photographed as Bill was literally just, you know, holding both sides of his head going, I don't know what I just did. I just took apart this vehicle that has been so important to the industry, the community, and I don't know how it's ever going to go back together. And then moved on top of it. So today I got to watch him unzip the bubble, which it is in a nice contained bubble, and see it probably better than it's ever been. I mean, it is in order of the way it was probably delivered when the project came about and they first introduced it to the public. It was a little emotional, you know, just seeing that car back in its full form and just to sit back and kind of take it in. But you know, the lawman's back.
You're damn Skippy, it's back. I mean, I can't wait to be able to display it, you know, the way it should be displayed. So.
I saw the car at Marcus Angel's place in Arizona when it was completely blown apart. But I saw it. Here's the thing: is I saw it at a good time. I saw it after a bunch of the paint had been done on the panel. So he had, you know, like the unibody had paint on it, and then the doors and the fenders were separate. It didn't have any of the hand painting or the, you know, any of the logos and stuff on it. And the engine was pretty much built at that point. So when I saw it, you got to kind of, you didn't see it in its really kind of battered form, you know, with no paint down and stuff. Like at this point when I saw it, it was more during the assembly process, which is, for lack of a better term, it's like a very pretty part of the build, right? It's the most beautiful part of the build. When you have all the pieces done, everything's been inventoried and things have been coated and powder coated and painted and all the little, you know, original marker bits and notes are all been, you know, retained and restored back. So I saw that portion of it, but I was looking at it going, you got a lot of work to do. And that was, geez, that was years ago. It feels like it was a minute ago, but I was like, I was just in Arizona and I must have saw it there, but I keep forgetting this 2 years of pandemic in between where we didn't really do much of anything. So it must have been, let's see, we've been doing this version of CarCast, you and I think it was 4 years in March. It was probably after the first year. So maybe 3 years ago.
About 3 years.
Yeah, about 3 years ago to do that project. Yeah.
God almighty.
It really just feels like we were just talking to him about it, and he was telling us a story of flying and getting cylinder heads and putting them into the overhead compartment on the plane going, shit, I hope that thing doesn't fall down and kill us. It's a pretty heavy cylinder heads.
Oh, my God.
Well, that's good. We love that car. That car is exciting. And to get the garage in order, like you said, the I assume most of the walls are getting up and the roof is done. And did your stairs arrive yet?
Nope, stairs haven't arrived yet, but we need the clean footprint to finish everything inside prior to the stairs being installed. But, you know, in 2 weeks, the garage doors will be shipped. And things are really coming into place, man. Now it's an exciting time. Kind of likening it to the lawman getting back together. All the crap that I saw prior to where we are right now, you know, is not positive. But where we are right now, every day, I'm seeing, you know, advancement towards the completion of it. So I'm getting pretty excited.
Do you have an estimated date on, I don't know, like, I know there's several milestones. I don't want to say complete.
Okay. I ain't doing that anymore. Don't do that.
I don't want to say complete because it could take years to get it dialed in. But there is a milestone. There's the occupancy permit. When you can start moving shit in there, right? And that's the big milestone you're going for, because that's when the inspectors go, everything is here and it works and electrical and fire and everything works. So is there kind of a date in mind for the occupancy permit?
Yeah, let's just say before Gage had his 16th birthday today, let's just say hopefully it's before 70.
Before 70. Yeah. All right. Well, listen, that's not an unfair date. I mean, I think things are going to be moving a little bit quicker than that. Here's one of these things where the guys at Metron doing a fantastic job and having sort of it's custom, but it's a lot of prefab, and having that does speed things up in the process. But then you backtrack the can't get anything, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, right now they're actively installing the 456 sheets of insulation that I have to put as the second layer of the roof before the actual roof goes on. So yeah. It'll be nice to see that pile of insulation gone and actually installed. But, you know, I mean, we got Benpack coming out installing lifts for a week. Right. I'm in contact with your buddies at LevRack, and we're trying to figure something out. So, I mean, they're going to be here probably for a period of time. And, hey, the best thing is that today I figured out 100% what I'm going to do with the flooring of the garage, thanks to Granddad.
I was going to ask about that. Yeah, what was the decision on that? Because we talked about it on other episodes.
Well, you know, it's going to be exposed concrete, and I'm going to put a clear on it, but I have a little surprise that I was thinking of, but I didn't think it was realistic. I thought it'd be cool, but not nearly as cool as it was presented to me by Richard here about whose building was it?
So it's Monster Energy. When they built their facility out in just outside of Corona in California, one of their things they did as a grand opening was they brought in all of their drift and moto and whatnot to come into the building in this party. And they let everybody do burnouts through the entire building. And they preserved all of that in the clear coat. And that was when Bill said it, I'm like, well, what better way?
That's actually a good idea.
I think it's a great idea.
I thought you said you were going to paint.
I'm not employing anyone else to drive my car. I'm going to be doing all of it.
I thought you said you were going to paint my face on the floor, but that was okay. No, it's all right. You don't have to do that anymore. It's all right.
Well, no, we can paint your face on the floor, but then I'll do the initial burnout.
I'll do the burnouts on the floor. You know, you know, Richard, it's actually a good idea because when we were at the Goodwood Hill Climb, the year that you went with us, Bill, was that the Porsche event? That wasn't the 70th Porsche, right? I don't remember because so we went out when we brought the 935.
After I hit the wall, I forgot everything.
You just forgot everything. when we brought the Porsche 935 out there, they were celebrating Porsche as the featured brand, and that event is just a couple weeks after like Le Mans. So we were there when they brought the four GTs, and then they brought the Porsche and they brought the pink pig, right? So they brought the one with the pink Porsche with all the, you know, meat stuff on it. And the Le Mans guys, what they're doing is similar to what you're talking about, is they're taking that car right off the track, dirt, dead bugs, everything. And then they immediately do a PPF film. They just put the clear paint protection film over the whole thing and preserve the car. So like, we get it. It's not really going to last forever, but we want to be able to show the car in its form coming right off of the track. And so it's funny because you see clear PPF and you see like a mosquito squished underneath it. I was like, first of all, the mosquito was already squished, so it's not making that much of a difference. But yeah, that was kind of interesting. They're going, oh, this is iconic to us. It's going to be a piece of our history. And, you know, we'd like to have this car in our museum or something one day. So let's do it. And, you know, I don't know if you were just at Foose's place recently. I thought you were there just a little while ago, and Chip was making a table, and he made a wood table and he put like glass on top of it, but down the center of the table he put like a channel and he filled it with some of his dad's old tools, hand tools and stuff. So he's got this beautiful wood table, kind of like what you see here in the studio, but this groove down the middle, you know, I don't know, maybe it's about 12 inches wide, a couple inches deep, filled up with tools, just kind of placed them in there and then put the glass on top of it. So again, telling that story and have a little bit of that history. Now you have to start to think about exactly where do you want to put the cars? Where are you going to do the donuts? And you know, so it doesn't get a little heavy on one side, a little light on the other side. And then you have to have the whole construction crew stand there and go, by the way, if anything goes a little south, be prepared to fix it.
I'll get there, dude. I'll get there. Anyway, I'm doing it with like Hot Wheels, right? So this is the GTX, this is the Lawman. That's the only way I can do it right now.
Richard can go out there.
I have the weight room too, right?
You get the weight room, yeah.
Yeah, that's going to be a debacle. So it's all good. I just can't wait to get to that point, believe me.
If you don't want to do the donuts in a full size car, Richard Waitis is a huge collector of RC cars, and he could get like 40 of those things out there drifting. And I don't know if those things ever lay down rubber, but it'd be fantastic if you can heat up the tires and lay down little rubber marks.
I've got a few foam tired ones that'll leave a little bit of rubber, but it's not going to be anything as impressive as, you know, a 325 Nitto on the back.
Exactly. Plus, yeah. I'm one of my sponsors.
I'm sure if you called Nitto right now, they go, use the RC cars.
Yeah, right now.
Yeah. Speaking of RC cars, how many would you say you have?
That is such a bad question.
I've got three here you can take with you.
He's got a room full. Now,
it's in excess of triple digits. It's a little
Jesus
over 100.
Christ.
Yeah, see, I wasn't kidding. He's got a room full of them, and they're on shelves. They're stacked everywhere. But it's interesting because when you see even just the photos, you're like, this is a cool shop. That's 1/10 scale. Yeah. You know, it's a really awesome car shop, like a hot rod shop that's 1/10 scale. But, Richard also developed a little Magnaflow exhaust for one of the nitro cars, one of the gas engine cars, right?
Yeah, we're working on that right now with Losi. They just came out with a Magnaflow livery 1/6 scale like buggy, And one of the cool things you want to do as a promo is I want to build a exhaust that, you know, gives you all the proper features, but looks like our product. So not only will it be MagnaFlow liveried, but it will have a scale exhaust muffler on it that actually functions. So it'll be kind of a cool project.
And how do you make the muffler so tiny? And what I mean is, I get it that it's tiny, but what I'm saying is do you have to just like machine like a billet muffler or something? Because it's not really like a stamped metal, you know, like your full-size assembly line down here in, you know, Oceanside.
Right. I mean, this is going to be something that, you know, I'm going to have to model and 3D print it and then put it on the flow bench to make sure it actually flows the correct way. And then once I do the flow bench work and I finalize it, it's literally going to go into the mill and it'll get cut out of a CNC and it'll be a billet muffler.
Do you have to use a little tiny CNC machine?
No, actually, it'll go right in line. The small parts are easy.
Yeah, small parts are easy. We were 3D printing some stuff. I had Chris Brown over. If you know Chris Brown from Brown Auto Design, he was at the Peterson Museum for a long time. He's a car designer. And he's been, I forgot the name of the guy, but he's been building cars basically in-house for a very, very, very good collector of cars and admirer of hot rods. And he's been doing a bunch of stuff. But on the side, Chris dabbles in a bunch of other products. So just on the Ford Lightning, just trying to dial in a couple little things on that. You saw some of it on social media where he completely redesigned like the door handles and the mirrors. And then he's got a 3D printer at home at his office that he's been 3D printing some of these pieces and bringing them up. And we've been test fitting. And, you know, the smaller pieces are easy. When we get to the larger pieces, you have to kind of 3D print two sides and kind of, you know, stick them together, glue them together. But the whole process, look, it's just it's door handles and it's mirrors where it's just, you know, smaller pieces. I kind of like the detail of it. But I liked learning, going through the process with him and saying, you know, these are the improvements. We're putting on a really expensive billet door handle that doesn't look that much different than the stock billet door, stock metal, you know, door handle. But the feel of it is different. The action of it is different. Where when you grab it and, you know, any hard edges have been smoothed out and it's more comfortable and it feels solid, you're like, it really is a wildly different piece, you know, and you think about, man, how much more improved it is over the factory piece. It's just not something that the car companies really thought much about back in just sort of the high volume days of cars, right? Before the huge bailout where, you know, where GM was like, oh, we can make 70 new models. If 8 of them are a hit, that balances us out financially. And then after the, you know, the bailout years ago, they're like, we don't really have the luxury to do that anymore. Like every car has to be pretty good and be pretty sellable, you know, otherwise we need to kill that car. And so now we get to, you know, we get to talk about and see things like aerodynamics, not just styling, but aerodynamics get into a play. Look, we love Mustangs and Challengers, but you know, in the muscle car era, we never really cared about the aerodynamics of those cars, and neither did the manufacturers. And now, you know, we're aero testing the wings and stuff on these cars and coming in with downforce. And like, this is supercar shit that we're getting into muscle cars. You know, Land Rover just announced the new Range Rover a little while ago, which Alistair Weaver will come back and tell us about driving. But just a few days ago, they did the Range Rover Sport, which I like that size. I like the V8 engine. Of course, they're going to do the V6 or the straight six and the straight six hybrid. They're going to have a V8 and they're going to have an EV. But picture Range Rover Sport and now just super flush door handles, very tight gaps, very not a lot of nooks and crannies on the body. Everything's very, very tightly fitted. The lights, the doors, the door handles. They got 0.29 drag coefficient on that SUV by just giving it a very, very smart design and the proper testing. Shit, we never think about it later. You guys just saw a bunch of G-Wagons the other, you know, this morning.
Gas wasn't $5 a gallon back then.
Yeah, but the G-Wagon was purpose-built, not really with the idea of of fuel efficiency or aerodynamics, or even like sound, just the sound of wind going.
Well, the class that are buying that G-Wagon can care less about the price.
that's true. But one of the things we get into, and this is this isn't really Richard Waitis's topic, being an exhaust guy, but what the car manufacturers noticed when they started getting into EVs, like the Nissan Leaf, for example, was they designed the Leaf, they put it on the road, and they're like, what is all this goddamn noise? And they realized without engine noise, they heard a lot of wind noise, and they had to reshape things like the side mirrors and even the headlights to move wind off, not just to be aerodynamic, but to be quiet, right? So when we get when you get a Range Rover Sport and you're like, oh, it's got a 0.29 drag coefficient, that's cool. Does it need it? It does when you make it into an EV, right? When you're doing 70 down the freeway with that thing, you don't want it to sound like you're standing in a, you know, in a storm, in a hurricane. So, yeah, anyway, kind of interesting stuff. Let's talk a little bit more about what's going on with Magnaflow. What's new with the company? What's going on with Magnaflow? And you can explain a little bit about the process of how Magnaflow gets built, because as much as we all know on this show, the performance exhausts and all the stuff that you guys do and all the cool cars and movie cars you've worked on, every Fast and Furious movie, Batman movie that's come out, you've worked on all of those cars. But the real bread and butter is replacement catalytic converters. There's a huge operation down there. I've been down there. You've been down there, Bill. Like, you have this awesome R&D facility for the aftermarket exhaust, but it's a blip on the radar of the big business down there, right? Explain a little bit of the Magnaflow structure.
So one of the unusual parts about where we sit in the exhaust world is that we're one of the only manufacturers, actually we are the only manufacturer today, that does catalytic converters and performance exhaust. And as a family-owned company that is made in the USA, it's a very unique place to be because the two markets don't always coordinate. And actually, me and Bill were just talking about this earlier. But the two actually work, you know, hand in hand in some cases. And then when one goes down, the other goes up, especially in the times when you're talking about, you know, performance being a little bit of a crunch right now. The number of cars that are coming off the lots that are high performance is down over historical numbers. But the number of cars, period, that are being operated on the road, we're seeing longer lifespans of vehicles, people using them longer, restoring older vehicles. And as we see that, obviously, the catalytic converter business continues to grow because we're still, albeit not seeing the number of new cars being sold, the number of old cars that are actually going out of use is not as high as it used to be. So our primary business of catalytic converters is what gives us a lot of these economies of scales that allow us to play in the world of high performance. And really, as you guys have seen, you know, our product line has expanded tremendously in the last 5 years into becoming more specifically geared towards lifestyles of high-performance automotive enthusiasts, you know, incorporating carbon fiber, different steels and metals for aesthetics, broadening the span of how exhaust is used on cars with like our X-Mod, so you can change out modules to pick out the sound levels you want, incorporating some of our NDT or no-drone technology. All of those are stems from the fact that what really pays the bills is the fact that everybody has to drive a car to get to work. And for the most part, even if you're driving a hybrid, you've got to have a catalytic converter. And that's really where, you know, the world of cars, it seems to be going, whether it's in the high performance world or in the daily driver. You take a Prius, well, guess what? It's got a gas motor as a generator. You know, you go into the supercar world and guess what? They have a gas motor supplemented by front drive with electric, because you get the best of both worlds when you can combine both those technologies. And really, we're in a very unique position in that we build both sides. And for the most part, the exciting part of what we do is that we help keep high-powered cars on the road because we are investing in technologies that allow us to have Hellcat red-eye power and still be street clean. I mean, that was something you go back and so you look at the cars of the 1960s and 1970s, you didn't get mile-per-gallon estimates because you were sub 10 miles per gallon. You know, that just was it. That's what cars were. They consumed a lot of fuel. Nowadays, to make sure that the cars are running correctly, you have to put a lot of technology into reverse engineering how the engine management systems work. It's not just as easy as just dumping something on and hoping for the best. You know, changing back pressure, flow rates, and how the O2 sensors read is all a part of the system. And to be honest, it's a lot easier to make high performance parts than it really is to develop cats. And you guys have been to the facility and you walk by our ECT facility where they're doing all the CAT development. You got guys in lab coats and, you know, they're out there putting precious metals in there, which, you know, we all know that market. We're watching people, you know, snag them off the bottom of cars because those metals are so expensive and they are such a big part of what makes the CAT work. And that's the interesting part, the science part of it all. But really, that is what MagnaFlow is today, is we're trying to service all aspects of exhaust. And whether it's something that you're looking to replace, increase performance, or maintain the emissions compliance, we want to be the one-stop shop for that. So to do that, we made a tremendous investment into having a sophisticated R&D center, keeping all the cost controls in line, getting our supply chain right. And the only way we can do that is being made in the USA. So that's something that we've really prided ourselves in, but it's really the only way that we can continue to offer the best product to the market.
Let me ask you about catalytic converters. Why is everybody stealing them? is it really the materials that it's made with, or are they just reselling them and going, hey, you know, here's a used CRV, you know, catalytic converter? Like, where are they going? Chris is in the studio going, yeah, his shit was stolen.
Yeah, it was. So they bring in recycle centers.
Yeah, and, yeah. What's going on?
You
there?
Get money from the metals, but in Long Beach, they had this like event the other day where you get to bring your car into the police station and they etch a license plate number in it and everything for free just so they're all marked.
Okay. Yeah. What's your thought?
Well, it comes from understanding what's in them. And there's a lot of misconception. There's a lot of people who are unfortunately being made victim to this because the thieves don't have all the information. They're just looking at the trend. And, you know, God forbid you go on a Facebook group today that, you know, everyone you jump on is like, hey, you want to sell your cats? And they're promoting some information that isn't always accurate because they're making money too. Let's go back and look at what cats are made of. You have platinum, palladium, and rhodium. And when you look at those precious metals and you go back to the era, you know, most of these cars that they're stealing from are 2005 up until maybe 2010, 2012. And during that period, of those three metals we talked about, platinum, palladium, and rodium was around like $3,000 or $4,000 a troy ounce. During the peak of the pandemic, it got up to $37,000 an ounce.
Wow.
That's a factor of 10. So think about this. When you had your – and we'll talk about a car that's actually been really one of the focal points of theft, which is the Prius. They're actually kind of dirty in the sense that they're generators and not engines that have variable load. So when you're driving a car and you look at the on time of a gas car, you're ranging from, you know, 1,500 RPM up to max. But for the most part, it's ranging. And cats work well when they're properly heated. And when, of course, you're cruising down the highway with all the multiple speed cars we have today, the goal is to get it to as low as RPM. The generator mode, when you're on any kind of a hybrid car, is a much higher RPM. So when they're on, they're actually polluting more than a car at the similar value. So you'll find that they use very high concentrations of rhodium, which is one of the more effective metals and the most expensive metal. So being that in that period of 2005 to 2009 and slightly after, rhodium was fairly inexpensive. So when you have to make a vehicle pass, you have to make a combination of platinum, palladium, and rhodium. But when rhodium's cheap and it's the most effective means, you use a lot of it. And what people found out was when you're in desperate need of money during the pandemic and you had nothing better to do and you're sitting around the house collecting some checks, you just took
a sawzall.
Yeah, and you can find these vehicles that had maybe, you know, $1,000 worth of precious metals in them, maybe 800 of that is the rhodium back in their day. But that $800 worth is a factor of 10 more now. So during the pandemic, you could take that part and it's worth 800. Now the and it would go to 8,000, but the person who's giving you the value obviously needs to make their cut. So the recycling center is going to move down a factor of that to whatever their margin that they want to make is. But they're giving you thousands of dollars for this item that in its heyday as a complete exhaust piece, you know, end-to-end catalytic converter, probably was only $1,800 or $2,000. But those precious metals in that era are worth so much that people are willing to go to jail for them. Because technically what is it? You know, these days felony theft is like $1,500. But it's kind of crazy that it is where it is, but it is because of the commodities market and the value of rhodium. That being said, rhodium has fallen down to about $17,000 or $18,000 now. It's still a tremendous amount more, which is why the theft is still recurring. But the bad part is people don't understand that the OEMs made the change too, as rhodium started to increase in value after the 2010 mark. The OEMs stopped using it. But people still say, oh, well, it's a Prius. So they'll go out to a 2020 Prius and try to rip it off. Well, that 2020 Prius made with that, you know, $17,000 troy ounce part has a lot less rhodium in it. And they've gone up with the platinum and palladium to compensate. So when you rip that car off and you're trying to get the precious metals and they take it to the recycling center, they're going to go, oh, it's only worth like $600. And they're like, well, no, these guys are getting, you know, $70,000. But again, the thieves aren't the most informed of what happened. And for the most part, the public doesn't understand how those cats differ from time to time because they use a precious metal that's traded on a commodities market.
Here's my advice to criminals. First of all, if you're going to go after a Prius, go for the oldest Prius you can get. And second of all, the catalytic converters are worth more than the car itself. So do us all a favor. Just steal the whole fucking car.
Steal the whole car.
Because if you cut off the cat, you'll leave us just irritated and pissed off. If you steal the car, we got insurance on it. So just take the whole fucking car and scrap it and do what you want with the catalytic converter. But stop fucking around with the cats by themselves. Just take the car. All right. Right? Yes.
Well, it's pretty crazy. You know, when you look at what the damage gets done, though, it's never that easy because especially with some of these the hybrids, they run the cooling system through it. So they're cutting the cooling lines. The radiators are draining out because they have to preheat these cats before they work. So they use engine heat. Then they're cutting electronic solenoids for the diverter valves. So these cars are literally damaged beyond the replacement value of the cat, but all of these other systems that are integrated with it. So it's a pretty big burden to bear, especially when it's you that comes out there and goes to start your car and all you hear is bah.
Yeah, it sounds like a monster truck.
Yeah.
All right. So get off of cats. Let's talk about the performance exhaust because we've had conversations about the exhaust, Bill and I, of course, many times. And the cars are getting incredibly more sophisticated. We've got active exhaust and you can change it on the fly, and there's buttons on the dash to open the exhaust, and there's different levels. And I know there isn't a manufacturer out there that makes it easy for you guys. You and I have had conversations about my Mustang. And it turns out, I don't know why, but the Mustang GT, the GT500, the GT350, and the Mustang Mach 1 all have an active exhaust with a valve. Every car uses a different valve, right? So it's not compatible. You can't put the GT exhaust on the Mach 1. You would think it was easy, but we now know it does not work that way. The exhaust works. I get it. But it just sort of like defaults into the full open position because what's going on with new cars? How is it a challenge for you guys?
Well, it's so integrated now. So when you look at performance exhaust, it used to be an afterthought. I mean, look at all the cars we had in the 60s, 70s, and 80s. If they needed to reroute something, they put a dent in the pipe, they shoved it in the corner. Those kind of tactics don't work anymore because the emission systems are tied to them. Or, you look at these late model diesel trucks, really all the way to the tailpipe, you've got diesel oxidation converter, you've got your DPF, you've got your selective catalyst reduction, and you're doing sprays in your DEF fluid. So all of that is all emissions control devices, and you can't touch it. All the way down to the tip in some of them, which is not necessarily a regulated part, but you've got 900 to 1400 degrees of temperature coming out the tailpipe, so they have intercoolers that are built into the tips and such, which all makes it difficult to play with the system. Kind of in the performance gas market, it's the same thing. Like you said, on your vehicle, not only is it physical differentiation, the diameter of the pipe of the GT500 versus the GT30 versus the GT, there's all changes. The rear fascia, albeit the same chassis, the bumpers are all different. So the exit points are different, which sometimes mandates that the valves be in different positions. But even the valve architecture, the way the computer interfaces it through which actuator is different. So there isn't a silver bullet to kind of satisfy all of it. I mean, we have to do all the interdynamic stuff to get the flow rate up and make sure that we make high performance. But at the same time, we still have to make it happy so you're not getting a check engine light. And I mean, that's probably the most annoying thing you can do with a modern car is take a fully functional system off, put something else on, and realize you caused a problem. And for, I don't know how everybody else is, but I'm pretty sure anybody else in the car market, the last thing we'd love to see is that freaking yellow check engine light or something that indicates you've done something wrong. Because then you can't really tell when there's a real problem. But more or less, it's just one of those things that's super annoying. So we got to put a ton of time into it. And we make some assumptions on things, you know, bringing your car in and doing the testing, we have to reverse engineer those parameters. And that means pinning out circuitry that's in there. That means taking apart the solenoids, finding their thresholds, how they operate. All of that becomes part of building exhaust now. So we've got reverse engineering computers and integrating with, you know, BCMs and PCMs as part of the protocols for developing an exhaust. It doesn't make it easy by any means, but it makes us bring it to a different level for how we present the product. It has to in every way be better performing, better sounding, and provide unique features such as anti-drone technology, and still incorporate all of those factory kind of fun features like the variable valve for the active exhaust.
You know, even let's say add to that, I was you and I had a conversation. I've been following a bunch of the videos when you guys were developing the exhaust for the C8 Corvette. And a lot of thermal testing on the C8 Corvette. You didn't want to install an aftermarket exhaust and have it melt the back of the car because the exhaust is so packed into the back of that car where the engine is, right? So now you have to start to do, I guess you guys are doing a lot of thermal testing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's one of those things that the mid-engine rear exhaust system puts out is a problem. The packaging is very tight against the rear fascia. And you've all seen it in the supercar world. You know, people dump some cats out the back and are throwing flames to be cool. But all of that's because the temperatures are so high, the exhausts are so short, and the heat that's there is captured. It's not like it's under the car. Aero is so well controlled these days that the gases that normally the air that passes over the exhaust pipes that were normally there to cool stuff off just isn't there. Now all of that's kind of tied into ports that have to duct air in. And the minute we change our configuration, we're now changing how the air flows through. And you remember on the C8 demonstration from GM, they talked about how all the ports work for cooling brakes and moving air through the car. We have to take all of their engineering, reverse engineer it, take in consideration or doing some empirical testing. And just, we did a lot of empirical testing with the C8. And what we found was, is, you know, if you go to a higher efficiency exhaust where I'm moving gases out faster, it's getting hotter. So we had to come up with, you know, insulation material. We use aluminum paneling. We have protectors for the solenoids so that we can create faster flowing gases that expelled the temperatures in a way that didn't affect the rest of the car or impact some of the electronic devices such as the actuators.
Yeah, I'm always fascinated by it. Super cool stuff. But we always get into it every time we get together or go down there and walk through the shop and see what you guys are working on. And there's been a lot from MagnaFlow recently. I think during the pandemic especially allowed you guys to start focusing more on the content creation side. And that's where we're getting to be able to learn about a bunch of these things, following you on social media, following MagnaFlow and YouTube videos and stuff, and kind of deep diving into sort of the science of this stuff, which and the art of it, the art and science of it, which I am just fascinated with. Before we wrap up, I just wanted to run through a couple of the cars that you've worked on that we've seen pretty recently. I know you've worked on, you know, you've had a long relationship with the Fast and Furious franchise, the Batmobiles for sure. We've seen them at SEMA, but this is going back to a young Richard Waitis with a little brown in his beard, not that white stuff you got all over your face. how did that come to be? How did you get involved with them from so long ago, I guess?
Well, it was just an opportunity. We had marketing director at that time was Craig Lieberman, who really kind of put us into the JDM market. That was really his goal. And when that opportunity came out, he was a technical consultant for the Fast and Furious in the first generation, and where he made the introductions to, you know, how to participate in these films. And from the top level, my job was then to go back in and figure out how we can really bring the brand and the product in. And I got to meet the guys from the transport department. Everybody knows who Dennis McCarthy is over there. You know, he built some of the coolest cars that have to do some of the craziest stunts. And then he's got to build, you know, six of them in 4 weeks. He's got these crazy deadlines, and he needs, you know, manufacturers and talented people to kind of make stuff come together in these short timelines. And fortunately, inside of MagnaFlow and the ownership there, they've put me in an alignment that I can go out and satisfy those needs for these clients. And in return, we've got to participate in like everything from Fast and Furious 2 up until today. To which 2 weeks ago, I was working on some of the Fast 10 vehicles that were being shipped out to various places across the world. Those are very international films. And it's kind of funny, whether you love or hate the series, there's so much car stuff behind them. And really, we have to think on our toes. And that's one of the reasons why we get to participate in that world is, you know, they come to us and say, hey, we've got, you know, six vehicles that need to do this, this, and that. We have the vehicle has all the safety equipment because it's got to flip over, can't catch fire. So it's got a fire safe fuel cell. We got to route stuff this way. So sometimes we're making facade pieces. Other times we're making real parts. And even now it's like so much of the cars that they're working with are the sounds are emulated or redubbed in. We've got things like trucks with Russian arms on them that we got to make these, you know, AMG SUVs silent so that they don't interrupt the sound of the vehicle they're recording. So we're working with, you know, support team. We're working with the actual cars. But it's just a matter of, can we as a company provide the part, but also can we satisfy that service part of it? And that's really where I think our opportunity with the different companies that have to build these cars was made is they need a person who can on the fly basically build a part, fabricate, make the decision whether or not the company is willing to make the investment of the parts, and then at the same time try to create the content side to tell the story after the fact, because we'll get, you know, a small logo here and there, but the movie obviously isn't about the branding. And in a lot of cases, the Batmobile, you'd never know that there was MagnaFlow in it until, you know, you peel the layers back. And that's where we get to do our storytelling, and I've got to capture all of those elements to retell those stories.
How many of the cars do you go down and personally make the exhaust for?
For the most part, in any of the cars that are on there, I have to build a prototype and bring it back. And then I have to use our mass production capabilities and the team back at the shop to refine. Sometimes I'm 3D printing tips. Sometimes it's I've got to bend parts that I can't bend at a certain bend angle. So I've got to bring it back. I just got to take a mock-up. We got to scan it. And then we got to take all of our capabilities to 3D render something, build a temporary fixture, build it times five, and then bring it back and install it the next week. So it's a process, and it all starts with the prototype, which usually is my hands under a car.
This is the unique part about MagnaFlow that I love about the company and I love about you is we deal with marketing people all the time, and they're fantastic, and they always help us out on all of our project cars. But there are a few of them out there that are super nerdy engineers and fabricators. So I know the guys at, you know, at Warner Brothers and stuff or Universal are going, hey, we should get Richard from MagnaFlow to help us out with this Batmobile, this car, because most guys will go, hey, whatever you need, we'll send you the parts. You want some mufflers, you want some tubing, you go and do it. But Richard goes out there and builds the goddamn stuff on those cars, and then they either reproduce or you send them more stuff, but they get a fabricator as part of the deal.
When you're representing the company and it has your name on it, why not send the best?
I was down there, I want to say 15-16. I brought the red Mustang down there, mm-hmm. and we were rolling it out, and I think your car was up on the lift getting stuff done at the same time. We were bringing both cars to SEMA, or the truck was there. Maybe it was the truck was there too. I don't know, but
no, it was the and the black Challenger, the yeah. manual.
Yeah, so we had that shop filled up at the time. But all right, guys, I appreciate it. Let's see, are we missing anything else? We're kind of running out of time. But where else we got going on? If not, just tell us where are we going next?
Yeah, where is he going next?
So we started down in Houston and working with just all the builders that we have throughout Texas. I went down and visited Bill Carlton over at Extensive. We're going to be stopping off in Austin to go talk to Joe and Amanda over at Martin Brothers, who we've been supporting for a long time. And I'm going to be up there chit-chatting with Richard Rawlings up at Gas Monkey Garage, hopefully by the end of the week. So pretty full schedule.
Tell Dennis how good the lawman looks.
Oh, for sure.
You guys definitely check out MagnaFlow's website. Check out MagnaFlow.com. Check him out on YouTube as well. You'll see the great videos. But you'll also want to follow Richard Waitis on Instagram. His account is Oxidizer, but it's OXIDIZR. So it's OXIDIZR. So follow him or just search for Richard Waitis. You'll find him up there. And if you're into overlanding, that's the big product line that they've been pushing the past couple of years. So they got the whole overlanding series, which we can get into it another time. But you guys are looking for a little bit better performance exhaust, but you want that shit tucked up tight underneath your truck so you don't bang it on the rocks. that's something that they put a big emphasis on in the past couple of years, especially. So look for that stuff as well. Anything you can possibly imagine has with an exhaust on it, Magnaflow makes it for. I know they got new Jeeps and TRXs and every Mustang and Bronco. Broncos are already out there. I don't know. Does Gage already got it? Magnaflow exhaust on his Bronco?
It's probably, yes, sir. Boom. Showed last night, and as I said, today was his first day that he drove to school on his own. And I, you know what? I should have put open headers on it so I could just hear the sound of this all
Yeah.
Point out wherever he's going.
He'll think it's cool as shit for the first like 2 days, and then be like, "Yeah, this is too much. I you know, can't talk, can't hear anything. Everybody knows where I'm coming and going."
Give, that'll give 48 hours to download the proper apps so that I can survey.
Yeah,
put a survey. Camera on him 24/7.
Richard should have built in a tracking device into the exhaust system for you. He'll never find it if you do that. You know, but what you need is you need the app that plugs into the computer so it tells you the speed the whole time, right? Mm-hmm. So at the end of the day over dinner, you can be like, "Oh, hey, I saw you hit 87 over here. I don't know if this is should be doing that."
I want the one that immediately texts me once the speed limit has been reached.
Yeah. Well, listen, he's a good kid. He's earned it. Let's see if he can keep it. That's the way it works, right? All right, guys. Yeah. Thank you so much.
Remember, he flipped my six-wheeler about 2 months ago. So hopefully that scared the dog shit out of him, so he won't carry it over to his Bronco. So.
Yeah, but to be fair, didn't you flip one as well?
I flipped many, but I'm also I've had my license for a couple of years. So
it's a lot of do what I say, not what I do over there.
Bingo.
It's a lot of that. Richard, enjoy your time over there. I'm sure as you rolled into the place, it was like Jurassic Park, animals running across in front of the house.
Zebras.
Yeah, there's the zebras, the kangaroos, and Rufus is probably shitting on the porch right now. I just
happy wife.
There you go. You missed it a couple of months ago. There was a giraffe. So,
oh boy.
I don't think they kept that one. I don't know, but if you
God, no more. I want a gorilla. That's all I want. Just give me a gorilla.
A gorilla? You got two little ones. You got the lemurs.
Yeah, but they ain't no gorilla. I want something that can rip people's arms off. So as I get older, I get to sick them on people. You can do my dirty work.
You can teach them Muay Thai.
I'm just going to teach him the spear and the jackhammer. That's all he needs.
That's it. That's all he needs. All right, guys. Thanks so much. Always a great time. Richard, have a good time out there. We'll see you when you're back in town. Until next time, keep the air in the spare and the bag in the wheel.
For the latest updates and call-in times, follow the show on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at CarCast Show. If you'd like to write in, fill out the form on CarCastShow.com. And don't forget to give us a nice rating on iTunes. CarCast is a Corolla Digital production and is produced by Chris Loxamana. For more information, visit CarCastShow.com.
Would you love to save money on insurance? Well, of course, who doesn't love a good deal? Well, when it comes to great rates on insurance for everything, GEICO can help. Insurance for your car, truck, motorcycle, boat, RV, even homeowners, condo, and renters coverage. Save even more with a special discount when you bundle coverages. Plus, add the easy-to-use GEICO mobile app and 24-hour roadside assistance, and the switch to GEICO becomes a no-brainer. Switch today and see how you can save. Simply go to geico.com to get a rate quote or contact your local agent.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.